Blog Talk Radio.
Forward flow of societal growth and development.
And he further also shares the thought that he adheres to the position that the African Americans and other diasporians must pursue the creation and recreation and circulation of a cultural imperatives which reinforces their destiny and their identity and purpose and direction and enhances their ability to attain political, economical, and self-reliance in a world which remains indifferent to their ability, or should I say, the capacity to create human progress. So, Brother Nwalamu Kabbala, as the founder and chair of the National African American Congress, prescribes a path and a map by which Africans can engage in the process of obtaining self-determination, self-respect, self-defense, and self-reliance. So, with that being said, I really, as I mentioned earlier, I'm excited to share with the listening audience and my wife, and for me to partake in the vast array of information and knowledge that Brother Kabbala has to share with us. So, after break, we will start a discussion with our guests, and I invite you to stay tuned.
Baba, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, Hotep, my brother. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I should say Abarigani.
Abarigani, Nia.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we're here on purpose, and I'm just so happy to have you with us this evening. And we look forward to getting you started with sharing with us the many thoughts and concerns that you have with regard to the importance of Kwanzaa and how it pertains and can be an effectual tool for the growth of us as African people in terms of our direction that we take going into what we have described in our conversation the other night as the new African Renaissance.
Yes.
So, without any further ado, I'd like to just start off by you sharing with us one question that comes to mind is what role can Kwanzaa actually play for the Pan-African development from a holistic perspective, in your opinion?
Okay, that's an excellent question, Baba. Before I answer the question, though, I'd like to give greetings to your listening audience and say that I really appreciate you asking me to be on your show. It's a great pleasure to just be able to come on the show and sit down and have a conversation with you and share with your listening audience. And I also like to give my greetings and respect to your wife, Queen Mother, who's there with you. It's an honor to be in both of y'all's presence. Having said that, I'd like to say also that I'm very humbled by the introduction you gave. And just one correction, I'm not a co-founder of Kwanzaa, but I was among the founding members. I actually came the second year that you did Kwanzaa in Los Angeles. And I just like to state, and I always like to state this because I think it's an example to our young people coming up. Kwanzaa started in a one-bedroom apartment here in Los Angeles, California, with only 50 people, and it grew and expanded from there to now where it's celebrated by over estimates are around 40, at least 40 million people around the world, and it's growing every year. And so, Kwanzaa is a And I'm getting to the answer for your question, but Kwanzaa becomes a symbolic representative of our history. It's a way for us to go into our history, to practice the values, to practice the traditions, to recall the traditions so that we don't lose our culture. Because one of the main ways that those who enslaved us and oppressed us here in the United States, one of the main things they did that distinguishes the enslavement period from any other period. I mean, there have been slaves in history, but one of the things that distinguishes this enslavement was the fact that they deculturalized us. In other words, they totally took away our culture. And so Kwanzaa becomes a very important and significant event for our people. And I believe that one of the reasons why our people have attached themselves to it and have adopted it and absorbed it as theirs. Kwanzaa was founded in the US organization. Maulana Karenga claims the creator of Kwanzaa. But in fact, now Kwanzaa actually belongs to the people. It's not an US organization event. US was the birthing process for it. But the people have validated it. The people have legitimized Kwanzaa by taking it into not only their community centers, but their churches, their homes, the great halls that where the Kwanzaa Karamu means feast in Swahili, are held every 31st of the month. And so Kwanzaa becomes a significant event for people of African descent because it is a way for us to journey and to traverse back to ourselves at a point in time before the European intrusion and imposition into our lives. And so it's a way for us to recapture our historical identity, which is very key, our historical identity such that we go back into our Africanness. We go back into those things that made us a strong people, that made us a people who made major contributions to human history. We go back to that because our oppressor cannot totally take away our identity. It's too ingrained in our third eye. And we say the third eye is the seat of our memory. And so we have a historical memory that they can't touch. You know, our melanated cells, they cannot touch that historical identity, and so it's just a matter of us as a people taking that journey back, and Kwanzaa becomes a vehicle for us to do that. And so I believe that this is one of the reasons why people have adopted and taken on Kwanzaa and see the value and meaning and significance of it in our lives. And this is something that we did ourselves. We didn't have to go and ask anybody for this holiday. We didn't have to sign any petitions. The people just did it. The people legitimized it. And this is very important, I think, that, you know, people ask all the time, well, you know, what is Kwanzaa? Is it a religious holiday? Well, Kwanzaa is not a religious holiday. It's a cultural holiday. And that's the distinction. And why that is important is because it doesn't matter whether one is Muslim or Christian or Baha'i or you can still practice the holiday. And in fact, I would dare say that there are probably more Christians that practice Kwanzaa than any other. So it becomes a very significant thing in our lives. But I think you were going to make a point.
Well, I had a few things that came up to mind. I know that in one of the papers that you wrote regarding sustainability and African development, developing a strategy, as it was, that you do mention in somewhere down into the depth of the paper that the integrity of African and Diasporan art forms and languages and systems of thought. And you talk about the Dogon and the Dogon, the teachings of Ma'at, Ifa, Akan, Zulu, and Masi, which you just really mentioned a short while ago, a moment ago. There seems to have been this attempt to divide and conquer throughout the years since we've been here, brought here as captive warriors. And we're now approaching a period entering into a renaissance, a spiritual renaissance era, where I think that there's a consciousness of awareness that particular those systems that were in place are being dismantled in terms of the essence of divide and conquer. And Kwanzaa, as you now just eloquently mentioned, has been one of those particular means in which we've been able to remove those psyche chains and bondage, as it were, and also the element of division. So it's interesting to hear you say that, and also the fact that you mentioned that within the Christian community, it seemed to be taken to Kwanzaa more readily than any of the other religious orientations. Do you have any thoughts about as to why that might be the case?
Well, as you point out, Kwanzaa becomes a way. It is a way now, and more people are beginning to realize this because it is so in Brazil, in most of the European countries, Germany, France, England, Sweden, of all places. It's celebrated in Nicaragua. I had a brother who called me last week. He's a teacher in Thailand, and he was asking me for he asked me to help him with a program to do Kwanzaa there. He wanted to teach the Thai students about African Americans and Africans, and so he wanted to do a Kwanzaa program. And so Kwanzaa becomes a way for our people to become ingrained again, to become re-ingrained, excuse me, with our cultural heritage and our cultural orientation. That is distinct. This is very important. That is distinct from European culture, because this is one of the problems, and it becomes a mental, what they call dissonance. It's a dissonance that exists within us. And dissonance means that there's an imbalance in us because we are an African people those of us who are African Americans, we are in a country that is dominated by Europeans and European culture. Okay, mm-hmm. Despite the fact that Obama's the president, we all know that he's not running things, but so it's very important for us to have this kind of event. Kwanzaa is the only event where black people celebrate on the scale that we do. 40 million people is the only event where we all do the same things around the world. And we are the most global people on the earth, on the planet. People of African descent, we are everywhere. We're almost in every country. And so we are the most global. And so so Kwanzaa becomes a way not only for us to journey back to our cultural orientation, but also it becomes a way to unify us as a Pan-African people. And that's where I think the role that Kwanzaa plays now currently in this era of what I call and you refer to as African Renaissance period, because from the networks that I am in and people that I'm dealing with, we will see a drastic change in Africa within the next 5 to 10 years. There are those who are planning strategy to build Africa in its own development mode. And so there's a 5-year plan, there's a 10-year plan. And one of the things that we have to work on is developing a 30 and 50 and even 100-year plan. You know, people wonder why and how, you know, China has developed so quickly. And it's because they have central planning. They don't have to deal with getting reelected every 2 years like they do in this country. And so if they can do central planning, they can plan 10, 20, 30, 50, and 100 years down the line. And that's one of the reasons why they have been so successful as they have in the last 20, 30 years. And so we have to do a similar thing in our community, in the Pan-African community. We have to bring together those of us who have the training, who have the skill, and who have the consciousness to do this type of planning for not just Africa, but for the entire African and diasporan community, because I believe that this is the way that we have to solidify ourselves and organize ourselves around our Pan-Africanity. And so and we were taught this. We were taught this. These are the lessons. We have to go back and research and learn the lessons that were given to us by Kwame Nkrumah, by Amilcar Cabral, by Malcolm X, by Sekou Touré, Thomas Sankara. They gave us lessons when they were alive, walking on this earth. They gave us valuable lessons that I encourage and actually admonish our young people and students to go back and to learn those lessons and to be able to apply them to fit the current conditions and the current needs of our struggle to become a free and proud people. So it becomes very important that we have a basis for our coming together. Okay. And Kwanzaa provides the value set and the value structure because it is based on, Kwanzaa is actually a holiday that is based on seven principles that were researched and found throughout African culture, throughout African society historically, and they were incorporated into a conceptual construct whereby they formed a basis for an ethical and moral system that we can live by that is uniquely African, you see? Mm-hmm. And so this becomes the importance of Kwanzaa because it gives us, when you have basis to come together around a set of principles and beliefs, then we also transfer that into what we do on a practical level. Because it's not enough just to unify around principles. We also have to unify around a common action plan and a common strategy in terms of how we move forward as a global people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And as a matter of fact, you pointed that out, as you mentioned, some of our renowned leaders and warriors from Du Bois to Garvey and Nkrumah, Brother Haji Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X, you mentioned how he pointed out to us that was during, I think, the Bandung Conference.
Yes.
The fact that it was essential that people of color, and especially poor people who were victimized by colonialism and imperialistic designs of the Europeans and its collaborators, that it behooves us and incumbent upon us to embrace movements that are geared towards independence and to improve our economic well-being throughout the diaspora. And you're very instrumental in that through the Organization of Congress of African People and other organizations. Would you care to share with us some of those thoughts with regard to that those efforts of sustainability?
Yes. One of the programs that we have like developed in the Congress of African People, which is currently as it's an online network, where we have close to between 7,000 and 8,000 people of African descent from around the world in many of the locations that I mentioned earlier. And so what the Congress seeks to do and become is a home of sorts. We want to be an online home for all people of African descent where they can come and share and exchange. But that is that we want programs to come out of the networking that we do such that we can affect our people's lives wherever they are. And currently, we have people who are networking together, forming consortiums to do development work on the continent, such as building housing, inputting infrastructure work such as roads, solar and energy projects, the sewage, dealing with the whole sewage question. And so we have people who are forming together, networking together, people who have skills, in these particular areas, who come together and network and talk about how we can work together to resolve some of the real issues that affect us in our localities around the world. And so so the Congress of African People is very instrumental in that, and there's been a lot of other sites that have developed. We have the Congress of African People claims to have one of the best, if not the the only STEM room for black scientists, technologists, engineers, and mathematicians. We have a very developed STEM room, and we have some really great minds who come there, and they have. In fact, we have one brother there who's actually has his own corporation and has his own program for going to the moon and to Mars, and so he wants to bring in other young people to be involved in this program. And he started early. He's a graduate student, a very bright young man. And so we're very proud to have those kind of people. We have the president of the UNIA there, Senghor Bey, Brother Norm Bond, who's over the Black Marketing Association, the National Black Marketing Association, and a whole host of others who are there and networking with each other and just so sharing ideas, sharing information. And some are actually working on strategy in terms of how we move through this Renaissance period, how we navigate through this Renaissance period. And let me say this, because it becomes very important. People will raise a question, because we have to understand the mindset of our people. So all of our people don't really understand, well, why do we have to come together? Why is it necessary for us to network together? Well, it becomes necessary because it has become more than obvious now that the interests of African people, and when I say African people, I'm talking about Africans on the continent as well as in the diaspora, it becomes obvious that our interests, many of our interests, are not the same as the interests of the ruling dominant society, okay? I don't share interests with the Tea Party. I don't share interests with Newt Gingrich. He doesn't have my interests at heart or in mind, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that we understand that, and that we teach our people to understand that we have interest as a community of people, as a world community, and as a national community. We have distinct interests that we have to define ourselves, and that we have to act on our own interests instead of our interests always being defined by others. And so, and that's one of the principles. The principle is that, you know, our self-determination, that we define ourselves. We don't allow anybody else to define who we are. We don't allow other people to give us our names, okay? We name ourselves. We define our own reality. We define our own interests, and then we act on that. And we develop a plan, strategy to realize our interests. And so, I envision a world now, and I don't expect Obama, I don't expect Bush, Gingrich, Romney, anybody to have this vision. But this is the vision that I have, and this is the vision that I share in terms of what I see for African people, is that we have to come together as a community of people and develop trade between and among ourselves. People have died for this. You know, they killed Ron Brown because of this. They killed Lumumba because they didn't want to see this happen. They undermined Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana. The same with Cabral, okay? So people have died. They killed Malcolm X because of this. Malcolm was fixing to organize the Organization of Afro-American Unity. They didn't want to see this happen. They have caused conflict and turmoil in the Congo, which is the richest, one of the richest locations on the planet. And they've supported and allowed this group that's going around killing. They have this is really the new Holocaust in the Congo. 6 to 8 million people have been killed over the last few years. 6 to 8 million people, okay? They're only paying, what, 6 million people for the Jews in Germany, right? But where is the clamor? Where is the clamor? Where is, you know, they talk about people getting ready to get killed in Libya, but they're allowing 8 million people in the Congo to be killed, and there's nothing said about it. And so that's what I'm saying, is that we have interest. We have interests that we have to pursue as a people that are different from the interests of the people who are the ruling class and those who dominate in the society. They don't have our interests at heart in mind. And so it's up to us to define those and to pursue them with a vigor and with a fire inside and with purpose. This is the day of Nia, a purpose to return our people and our community to its traditional greatness, to allow the creativity that exists in our people, the intelligence that exists in our people, to create our own framework of living, okay, that we create our own reality. We have that ability and capacity. I'm tired of those people who come along talking about what we can't do, and it's always going to be like this. Please, of course not. Of course not.
Our ancestors, I'm sure, get very, very disturbed when they hear that kind of expression. Warriors, you know.
Yes. And then we're talking about, you know, what we can't do, and I said, look, I don't want to hear. And people coming out talking about, in the Congress of African people, talking those what we call categories of impossibilities. I took them out because, we don't need that. They can get that on CNN, ABC, NBC, every day, all day, okay? But what we are here to do is to redefine our reality. We have come, we are the people that we've been waiting for, okay? I ain't waiting for nobody to come out the sky. We are the ones that we have been waiting for, and our time is now. It's time for African Renaissance. This is the era that we live in, and so it's time for us as a people to harness our resources and to utilize the wealth of knowledge, the wealth of resources that we have in our community to rebuild ourselves as a world class community and to contribute to human progress in the way that we can.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to take a moment to mention the seven principles of Nguza Saba. You mentioned Nia, myself at the beginning of the show, and then, of course, you just mentioned that in terms of the purpose definition and the purpose of us as a people to move forward. But I just want to start with the first principle, umoja. Unity.
Yeah.
To strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. And then second comes Kujichagulia, self-determination. To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves instead of being defined, named, created for, and spoken for by others.
Okay,
Ujima.
Baba, can I ask you this?
Yes.
Before you finish the principle, I have a little surprise for you. I may have not mentioned this to you, but I am actually here. We're having a reunion tonight of some of the original US members who were founding members of Kwanzaa when it started in 1966. We have a few people here, and if I could, I would just like to introduce them while you go down the principles, and after you finish, if you could just ask them to have a word about what their experience was when Kwanzaa first started. Would that be okay?
Oh, yes, indeed. So I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah. Thank you so much for having them, and it will be a pleasure to have them share their thoughts.
Okay,
so,
just one moment. I got to move across the room.
Okay.
Okay, Barbara, I have three of the original advocates of the US organization who were involved in the original Kwanzaa celebration back in 1966. And I have here with me, we're having a reunion tonight, and I have here with me Sister Kicheko Davis, who is now from Philly, and I have Nwalimu Rashimu and Nwalimu Sigiri sitting here with me. And Baba was just reading the principles, and after he finishes, I asked him if we could allow each of you to say a word about how it was at the first Kwanzaa. I'm sorry, Baba, go ahead.
Oh, that's perfectly okay. And could you just repeat their names again? You had Sister Kicheko, you said? Was that the correct pronunciation?
Yes, Sister Kicheko Davis.
How do you spell her name?
I'm sorry?
Kicheko, you said? Kicheko?
Kicheko.
Kicheko, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, repeat that again.
Nwalimu Rashimu.
Okay. Okay, and the other guest?
And his brother Nwalimu Sigiri. We're all sitting here together.
Welcome, brothers and sister. I'm very pleased to have you on the show. It's my pleasure and honor. I will continue from where I left off with reading the principles. And then I'll just let those of you who were part of the termination, the incubation, and the birth to actually share the profound thoughts and awareness of these principles. So I'll just go over them, Umoja. Well, why don't I let one of you do that, all right? And because I think it's fitting and proper. So I'll just open the mic up to whoever wants to speak.
What did you want to do, Barbara?
For them to go over the principles, if you'd like. Would you want me to continue doing that? Or?
No, Sister Kicheko is hearing it, so she's going to start off.
Wonderful.
Habarigani.
Nia Habarigani.
Nia? You want us to go over the principles. We're going to start with Umoja, which was Monday, December 26th. And as we used to say back in the 60s, if you didn't have Umoja, you ain't going to go very far.
Mm.
So Umoja, unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. That tells it all, but first of all, you have to get personal unity. You have to get yourself together before you can get anybody else together.
Mm.
And that's what people need to work on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one, which was Tuesday, is Puji Chagaliya, self-determination. To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves, instead of being defined, named, and created for, and spoken for by others. All that deals with is it's time for black people to stand up for themselves and determine what is necessary for them to do together. That's what it's all about. We got to come from an African perspective. We got to come that way because that was our original heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Ujima. Uh-huh. Hello?
Yes, we're listening.
Okay. Ujima, collective work and responsibility, which is one of the hardest ones to do. Work together. Focus on one thing and work together on it. To build and maintain our community together and to make our sisters and brothers problems and to solve them together. Nothing is going to happen until we as black folks start solving our own problems. We can't leave it up to other people to do that, you know, because they don't really know us. And until we get that concept that we are responsible for each other, you know, things are just going to go along as haphazardly as they have been all these years, centuries, really, more than years. Okay, Brother Heshimu is going to do the next four.
Asante Nana, thank you.
Habarigani and Dugu.
Nia Habarigani.
And James, I mean, Nia, Asante. Okay, the next principle is Ujamaa. Ujamaa is cooperative economics. And this means that we have to build and maintain our own store, our own shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. No more setting up little businesses stores in the community's face. The business is there for the community. The community has to contribute to the business, and the business must contribute to the community. The next is Nia. Nia means purpose. To make it our collective vocation, the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. We have had a traditionally great past before we became slaves and were brought to America, and we need to return to that traditional greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Number six is Kuumba, creativity, to always do as much as we can in the way that we can in order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than when we inherited it. You can't go through your community and leave it in bad shape. If you live there, you have to maintain your community and keep it beautiful for your children and their children. Number seven is Imani, to believe with all of our heart in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and in the righteousness and victory of our struggle. You've got to have faith that what we're doing is the right thing, and we will triumph, and great people will return to their tradition. Asante Sana, brother.
My brother. Could you share the audience your name in person?
My name is Hei Shimu.
Adua, thank you, my brother. Thank you for sharing your energy and your knowledge with us.
Thank you for listening. And here's the brother back.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Okay, Barbara, this is brother Imani Mukabila.
Yes.
Yes, I was going to ask if we have time. I don't know what our time is like, but I would just like to ask if we could have Sister Kicheko and brother Imwalimu Hashimu just give a word about what it was like to be at the first Kwanzaa.
Oh, no, that would be great. It would be a pleasure to hear that. Please.
Okay.
And we have at least another half an hour.
Okay, great. I'm going to give it over to Imwalimu Hashimu, and he'll just say a few words about what it was like to be at the first Kwanzaa.
That'll be great.
Yes, back in 1966, we decided that black people needed holidays to celebrate, to show our respect for our heritage, and to speak in terms of what we need to do in our future. And we felt that Christmas was not a positive holiday for us. And Maulana Ron Karanga, the creator of Kwanzaa, realized that if we take something away from black people like Christmas, that we had to replace it with something as great or greater. So he came up with the concept of Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa means first fruits, and that is harvest time in a lot of parts of Africa. And what we do is we harvest our energy, we harvest the things that we've done productive throughout the year. So the first Kwanzaa was held in someone's apartment. I don't remember whose apartment we were in, but it was just a room full of people. This is in 1966. We had a little celebration with the Watoto, the children. We had the children do little skits and stuff. Kwanzaa was originally spelled with one A at the end, but we had seven children, so Maulana wanted to include that seventh child, so he added another A to Kwanzaa and made it Kwanzaa. And we celebrated at an apartment, had little finger dishes, and sat on the floor, and now millions of people all over the world are celebrating Kwanzaa. And that's basically how the first Kwanzaa came down.
Well, that must have been a very awesome and energized experience. It just so happened that my daughter was born a year before. She was born in 1965. So I was going through a very deep and intense emotional experience during that 24-month period. So I can understand now another reason why we're talking on this show this evening, that we all have so much in common as opposed to not having things in common. And,
yes, sir.
And it is
That's so true, brother.
More of a spiritual experience more so than anything else. And I'm just so happy to hear you share that.
Well, it was spiritual in that, you know, it wasn't a religious holiday, so nobody had to worry about what religion they were. It's not political. Nobody has to worry about whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. It's a thing for all people of color, and all people in the world are celebrating Kwanzaa now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, brother, for being part of that, giving birth to such a profound holiday throughout the African diaspora. The ancestors are pleased and grateful, and those of us who are alive throughout the world have a debt. We owe you many thanks for being a spiritual warrior. So I look forward to you sharing more thoughts about the experience, and I hope that this won't be the last time that you will be a guest on our show.
I would love to be a guest anytime. So I'm going to pass it over to Sister Kicheko right now. Asante,
mm-hmm.
brother.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Sikitu.
This is Kicheko.
Yes.
That first. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Welcome again.
Oh, thank you, Asante. That first Kwanzaa was the first time I had ever gone to anything Black, you know, and I went with the Pasadena group, and it was an amazing thing for me. We sat on pillows on the floor, we ate with our fingers, sisters served brothers. It was just all just phenomenal for me to be there, you know, and be exposed to this. And after that, I became a part of US organization as the dance troupe director,
mm-hmm.
you know, and formed the Kaifa dance troupe. Did he go out?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Just go ahead.
Okay. And so after, you know, but that first time was an eye opener for me in terms of just seeing brothers and sisters who were working together like that and pulling this off. And so it sort of inspired me or motivated me to become a part of this, that this was something of value that I could contribute to. And
mm-hmm.
so for me, that first Kwanzaa was a kicking off, you know, thing. And it brought me a sense of well-being and a sense of, you know, belonging. That was
mm-hmm.
the thing. I belonged to this group just because I was the color I was, you know. Now, after that, I did learn doctrine and did learn stuff, but it was just good to be accepted, you know.
Mm.
And that's, you know, what I really liked about the celebration.
Yes, yes, wonderful. So you're a dancer. Are you still dancing?
No, I'm not still dancing. But back then, I was a dancer, and I learned my African dance from Leta Mbula.
Okay.
And her husband, I mean, Leta has passed now, but her husband and their friends taught me and my dance troupe, you know, Southern African dance. And, you know, you can't learn dance without learning the history, without learning the customs that go along with it. You know, we learn the songs. And so it was all just marvelous for me in terms of the exposure, because I came out of a dance. I had been dancing since I was 7, but that was ballet and tap. You know, so learning African dance was just eye-opening, and I was just amazed that I could do it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a drummer, and so I have an affinity to whenever I meet and talk with the dancer, because I recognize that they hand in hand, no pun intended. And
right.
I was very encouraged and really enjoyed the knowledge that Brother Imwalu is also a dancer.
And oh, okay. Yes. And Brother Ntume was my lead drummer. Yes. And so was Brother Heshimu here, you know, and his brother Sagidi. You know, they were all, you know, drummers for the dance troupe. You know,
well,
they learned from Big Black.
Oh, yeah, Big Black, one of our master drummers, along with Baba
yeah.
Alatunji and
right.
Baba Chief.
Right. So, I mean, back in those days, we traveled in small circles and we learned from each other and grew and developed. And, you know, it was just all good. I mean, everything wasn't perfect. I'm not going to say that. But you grew and were motivated to do things for yourself because you understood, you had a better understanding of our history as Black people in this country, how we got here, what happened to us, you know, when we got here, you know, and our attachment to Africa, that was one of the main things that enslavement tried to do to us was remove us from Africa, just make it seem like we would never want to be attached to it, and that was the one place that would give us the things that we needed, you know, was to learn our ancient history, was to learn contemporary African history, was to know, you know, what had happened to our people.
Mm. Yes, indeed. And one of the ways of doing that, through the tradition of the drummer and the dancer, was to tell to the community by dance and by drum. We were the musical griots, as it were. And that's one of the things that I must talk about. One of my missions, my major mission, is to promote the drum to be returned to the family, those of us of African descent, to have a drum in the house and a designated drummer. I talk about the fact that it was the late Ozzie Davis who inspired me some 35 years ago at a fundraiser for my godson. And he mentioned that we need to bring the drum back to the home. And along with the drum, the African drum, we need to bring African dance into the home as opposed to dances which are designed by the powers that be who really don't have our interests in mind. And we tend to gravitate to these dances and emulate dances which are dealing with lower self-consciousness as opposed to higher self-consciousness. So, I also invite you again to come on the show so we can talk more about that, how important it is for African dance to be in the home and then within our community.
Right. I mean, there's that African proverb that says, if the message is beat upon the drum, all will know.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a website, drumsofchange.com. where I sell drums from, and I just wanted to share it to the listening audience. And I also might want to add that those of you who are listening, if you would like to share your thoughts with us, you have the number. Those who do not, the number is 347-215-7331, and you just have to push the number one button, and that will log you into the show, and you can feel free to share your thoughts and concerns and comments with the invited guests. But, yes, my sister, as you were saying,
Kwanzaa Week is the time to share how Black people feel about things. This is the week. Kwanzaa was originally established so that we would have a week to look back on the year and see what we had benefited from, what the outcomes had been, what the results were, so that we would have some idea of what to work on in the coming year. That's why it was a week, to give us time to think, to review, to reflect, and then to recommit our Black community commitment.
Yes, indeed.
And people don't want to deal with Kwanzaa in that light, because it means that you have to look back on yourself and those around you, and you have to come to some conclusion about what you did all year, and that's what we should do. You should look back and see, what did I do for my family, for family prosperity? What did I do for my personal growth? And what did I do for the betterment of the Black community?
Mm.
Answer those three questions, and you can start the new year off on a high note.
Absolutely. I have a friend of mine, brother Abiodun Oyewole. We grew up together, in a boarding school called Woody Crest. And he's one of the original last poets. And he has he has a New Year's Eve party every year, and he's passed it to his son. But the point I wanted to make was every time he has this New Year's Eve party, they turn off the music for a half an hour. And everyone in the at the party, he offers them to share their thoughts about the experiences that they had the previous year. And just what you, as you were just sharing with us, he also asks that they share their thoughts in terms of what they have planned for the coming year.
Right.
And I was just so encouraged when I went to his first New Year's Eve party and that occurred. So it's just so important for us to realize that these suggestions in terms of how we should interact with one another when we get together is something that's in our DNA, is in our collective psyche. And it's not just conjured up that this is something that we should do. This is part of our culture. It goes back thousands of years. So I'm so happy to share that with us.
Okay, Sante, I was happy too. It's good to talk to people who are in the know.
Well, likewise, and Sikitu Dua, thank you so much for sharing with us your experiences and your wisdom.
Yeah, it was our pleasure. Let me give you back to Imwali Mukabaila.
My pleasure meeting you.
Yes, sir, Baba.
Yes.
Can you hear me, Baba?
Yes, my brother.
Yes, sir. Good to be back. If I could just share a thought, as I was listening to Brother Hashimu and Sister Kicheko, just to add to what they said, Kwanzaa becomes a means of us healing ourselves also from this whole process of enslavement and the kind of oppression and exploitation that we've experienced here in the diaspora. And so it becomes a way of healing. I talked earlier about the journey back to ourselves, and I believe that it's that journey that in that process we also experience and develop our own healing. It becomes a way for us to in fact heal ourselves, the journey that we go through to reestablish and to redefine our identity and our purpose and our direction. That process becomes a healing in and of itself.
Mm.
And so on a mental and psychological and spiritual level, Kwanzaa has that kind of a meaning to our community, and it's one of the reasons why I believe that so many people have adopted it.
Mm.
And I make that point as a way of segueing into the next point I want to make, is that we also have to be concerned now, because African Renaissance, it includes healing, of course. That's primary. That's one of the primary things, because we have to heal ourselves from this experience. I mean, you can't go through a history of being taken away from your homeland, traversing an ocean, going through Jim Crow, people being lynched, shot down in the street just because of their color. You know, you can't go through all of that without some way of healing yourself, okay? But at the same time, the other ways in which we heal ourselves is also that we change our objective reality, that we change our social condition. It becomes a thing of changing our consciousness, but also changing the conditions that we live in And so this becomes what the African Renaissance is about. It's about healing ourselves mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually on one level. And then on the other level, it becomes a way and means of developing a strategy and plan which will change our people's lives, which will change the conditions that we live under, that will give us control of our destiny, give us control of our daily life. And then the question becomes, how do we do that? Okay, I would advocate that we do that. And remember I said earlier about studying our ancestors who have come this way and left us messages. And this is why we revere our ancestors. But we were left messages by ancestors who have come, and some of us haven't got the message yet.
Mm.
But those of us who have, we have to share this with the rest of our people. Okay? And like we said, Nkrumah left a message, Cabral, Toure, Malcolm, George Padmore, they all left us messages. And the message that has really changed my life for the last 2 or 3 years was the one by Marcus Garvey, where he said that we must seek to control all industries that affect our daily lives and our destiny as a people in that community.
Mm.
Okay? And so it becomes important for our economic development and our economic growth that we in fact do what we need to change our social conditions, okay? To change our social conditions, to in fact build industries, to own industries, to develop trade routes between and among each other, okay? That we develop trade routes with Africa, that African Americans develop trade routes with people in Brazil, in the Caribbean, okay? That we develop those kinds of industries, for example, like even in the area of fashion, toilet paper, basic necessities, such as
we can make
those things for ourselves, for our own community. And it's become very important that we don't become a community that remains dependent on the dominant society, but that we in fact look at those industries that we can develop for ourselves and have control, and that we, when we have resources that we can share with Africa, that we share with them, and vice versa, when they have resources that we can use, that we exchange with each other. And I just talked to a brother today who, in fact, has an airline. He has built an airline, and they will open in March, and they will have direct routes from points in Africa to the Caribbean, and to they're going to start off with points in Florida. And so we are developing, we're in the process of developing our own trade routes so that we don't have to depend on others to, in fact, trade with each other. And it becomes very important that we exercise that we exercise our own sovereignty, okay? That we exercise our sovereignty as a people. We have the right to sovereignty, to control our own destiny, and so it becomes very important that we develop those strategies that exercise our sovereignty and that ensure our sovereignty and ensures our interest as a community of people in the way that we define them and the way that we choose to pursue it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm looking forward to us talking in another at another show, because you don't have the time to really get to it in depth. I just wanted to touch upon the fact that it was President Obama's presidency, and also I must acknowledge that we have a caller, and a caller from area 727. We will acknowledge you and have you share your thoughts in a moment. As I was saying, my brother, it was his presidency that we became aware of the fact on a large degree that China was loaning the United States money for its budget. You know, you have more knowledge of this area than I do, but I'm just beginning to do the research, and it's just, I was just amazed to find that out that China was actually looked upon to assist the United States in their financial dilemma. And then I remember reading that China has been making inroads in Africa in terms of infrastructure development and sustainability. And I know that that's a whole other ball of wax in terms of the political ramifications. And, of course, that we don't want to make the same mistake that we've seen in other, you know, colonialists. They took their needs out of Africa and left us without any benefit from that relationship. So that's something that's pretty interesting. And now you're telling me that there's a brother who has an airline that is now geared towards providing transportation between the Caribbean diaspora sector and the motherland. That's really encouraging to hear. But I just wanted to share those thoughts, and perhaps you can address that to some degree once I acknowledge and allow the person who's in the who's holding on online. Okay, my brother? So hold on, please, for a moment. And
sure.
Hello, caller from 727. You're on the line. Would you like to share some thoughts with us?
Oh, yes. I just wanted to say Habarigani.
Habarigani Nia.
Yes. I just wanted to share that I've been listening, and I'm very impressed. I'm calling you from Safety Harbor, Florida. This is Ajamu Babalola. And I just wanted to ask that the callers your guests would just share with the lighting of the candles. Someone just given misinformation on Facebook, and I tried contacting them and letting them know how to light the candles as opposed to their lighting the middle candle, then going all the way to the end, far left, and right lighting the red candle. I try to tell them to go right next to it and on from there. You know what I mean? Basically, they don't get it. I sent them to Marlana Goringa's website, and they still didn't interpret it correct, so evidently they think they're right, and I just wanted like for them to touch on that. And I would also like to share that we started celebrating in 1989 in Clearwater, Florida, and since that time in 1990, we started and developed our own camp in Guzosaba, an Afrocentric educational camp for young people from the age of 5 on up. And it's a 7-week camp, and each week we deal with the principal of that week, and basically they've learned a great deal, and they've grown to appreciate it even more, and interpreting how they can use it in their daily life, because that's what, you know, that's the way we go at it. So, because I felt that was the proper way, and from my understanding of what Karenka and the others have put together, that's what the intent, and so we've taken it to that level in little old Clearwater, Florida. But I just wanted to share that and just let the callers know how impressed I am. I'm 64 years old, and I know that we still have others that are still committed to the cause, and you know that hopefully the young people, if they're going to be taught, we need to teach them correctly, and that's what I've been sharing.
Oh, wonderful, brother! Thank you so much for sharing that.
Okay.
My wife had shared with me thought about candle lighting, but I'm going to let the experts, the one who was part of the origin of this ceremony and this holiday, to share those thoughts in terms of the question that the brother had about candles.
Beautiful. All right. Peace and blessings to all.
Peace and blessings to you, brother. And I'd like you to, if you could, contact me on my website, send me your email. And
okay.
I'm on. It would be a pleasure to become befriend with you and to also follow the program that you have in Florida. That would be.
Yes.
Brother Malamu, would you care to share one of your guests share the technique and the methodology of lighting candles as stated by Brother Ajamu?
Yeah, just quickly, and Sister Kicheko or Brother Ashimu can correct me if I'm wrong, but we start off with the black candle first, which stands for unity, and then we go from black, red, and green, and so it's you go the black candles first for unity, and the first red candle next to the black candle is lit next. That's Kuji Chagulia, and then you come to the green candle, which is Ujima, and then you go back and forth until you get to the end. So it's the black candle first, then red, then green, then red, green, like that. And I'm getting confirmation from Brother Ishiwa and Sister Kicheko that that's correct.
Perhaps we can have that going.
I don't know if the brother's still on or not, but I just wanted to also say that I want to congratulate him and his family and the community there for the work they're doing around Kwanzaa. And it demonstrates again the importance and significance of Kwanzaa in terms of what it means to communities to be able to practice this holiday that becomes a journey for us to go back and return ourselves to our identity, our African identity. But at the same time, it becomes a healing process to heal us from the types of oppression and exploitation that we have experienced in this society. But at the same time, it also points us to the need and the necessity to engage in practical work to change the social conditions that we live in for our people, because that becomes essential. And it's not about theory at this point. It's about practical solutions that can change our people's economic life and their political and social existence. Those are the key things. But at the same time, I always want to emphasize this. At the base of changing our economic and social conditions and life is also the fact that we also, and this is where Kwanzaa becomes so important, because it's very important that we are spiritually grounded as we do that. As we change our social existence, we also must maintain our spiritual groundedness so that we don't lose ourselves, so that we don't become what many people in American society have become, alienated from themselves, alienated from others, alienated from nature, and this is why it becomes important for us as a people to embrace this and it's not just a holiday. It is a process. It is a process of healing. And so it is so significant in that regard, and I can't repeat it enough so that the understanding is given.
Yes, well, that's as my show is named, Grassroots Holistic Health. We're dealing with concentrating on a grassroots level and dealing with health, but the word health can mean many things on many different levels. But when you incorporate the word holistic, you know, dealing with natural, given by nature, by the motherland, by Mother Earth, as it were, from herbs and natural means of healing, which allows you to be in contact on a more purer way, purer level with the Most High.
Regardless
of what religious orientation or spiritual orientation that you're dealing with. And again, I want to echo what you said about my brother who called in. Very commendable for him to be doing in terms of the camp. You know, I'm one who has been to camp many times, and it was always a transformational experience for me as a youngster to be out into the woods.
I have another treat for you if you have a few more moments.
Sure.
Okay, I have Dr. Scott Brown here, who is the brother who actually wrote the book on the US organization, Dr. Karenga and Cultural Nationalism. It's called Fighting for Us, and he just walked in the door, and I'd like for him to say a few words if you have a few moments.
Sure. What is his name, Dr. Brown?
Dr. Scott Brown. Yes, sir. He wrote the book on the US organization, and is one of the reasons why we come together now, because it kind of brought us back together working on the book project with him, and it brought us back together. Dr. Brown probably has more information on the US organization than any of us, because he's an excellent researcher, and he teaches a class at UCLA. He's at UCLA and teaches classes there, and he's in the African-American Studies department. So I'd like for him to say a few words, if you don't mind, Barbara.
Oh, no, it would be a pleasure. Please, thank you.
Okay, this is Barbara Wesley Gray in New York.
Barbara Wesley Gray, happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you. Happy Kwanzaa to you, Dr. Scott Brown. My pleasure to have you with us.
Sure thing.
It would be a pleasure to have you share some thoughts with us.
What were you all covering prior, just a few moments ago? You and Brother Marlene and Kabila.
The context of development.
Sure. Yeah, I think, Kwanzaa is one of those special times where the gathering focuses on principles and, concepts that we aspire towards, as opposed to just being a kind of moment of commemoration of an individual. It's bigger than, the opportunity just to take a vacation or an opportunity to exchange material things. It lays out, I think, some very important values that we can look at on a regular basis as far as, having a foundation for assessment around who we are. Are we really who we say we are? And are we going in the direction that we need to go in? That's where I think Kwanzaa has this very special place in our lives, growing every year. And as more and more people are talking about the seven principles, they're talking about the special week that we focus on them. But we also now have more conversation in independent schools, more conversation in organizations around how we can infuse the Nguzo Saba into our daily lives. But you can think of Kwanzaa sort of as that real kind of special moment where we dedicate whole days to that, but it's also laying the foundation, I think, for the kind of cultural change and cultural development that the 60s, the best of the 1960s, had to offer.
Absolutely. And it's the inspiration of shows like this and having guests like you speak that allows us to resonate with this celebration 365 days a year.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right about that. A show like this happens where you can have independent thought. And it's the kind of media, I think, that's going to see what's going on under the radar. The mainstream media is not going to capture all of the diverse ways that people are celebrating Kwanzaa, the diverse ways that people are engaging in it, and it's only through the kind of innovative search for ideas and mechanisms that you provide that we're going to get to that true meaning and true happenings with Kwanzaa around the country and the world.
What comes to my mind is the word griot. you have, in a sense, an electronic facility of doing what the griot did thousands of years, and will continue to do in some parts of the motherland.
Absolutely.
This is like the electric drum, as it were, you know. And so I'm excited. I just had a birthday a couple of days ago. I turned 68 years of age, and the brother that was on the phone, I think he said he's 62. And I think we all are within the same age range within a 10-year span. And it's just a blessing for us to be able to communicate with one another heart to heart, spirit to spirit, so that we can collaborate and be able to, you know, take this and fulfill our purpose in this particular journey, in this incarnation. So I hope that this won't be the last time that you're a guest on the show. And everything is...
Looking forward to it. Just the beginning.
And yes,
indeed. I just want to say thank you to, you know, the whole generation of activists that participated in the revolution of the 1960s, because Kwanzaa is one of the real concrete achievements of that period. There are a number of them, too many to name. You know, you have Black Studies, you have all these independent Black organizations and institutions that came out of that. So what's very interesting is around the time of Kwanzaa, when we meet elders and veterans of the struggle such as yourself, it's also keeping that connection among generations. And so I enjoy this time of the year, especially because of that intergenerational dialogue that Kwanzaa helps foster.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for touching upon that dynamic. And again, thank you for being a guest and coming in a very appropriate, timely fashion. We have about 4 minutes remaining, and again, thank you all for sharing your energy and knowledge and wisdom, and most of all, thank you for being a participant of this celebration throughout African diaspora named Kwanzaa. Brother Kabbalah. Brother Mondo.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And again, thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much. And Sister Chicheco and Brother Machinka.
Heshimo.
Okay, I'm sorry for the mispronunciation. But I want to thank all the... And of course,
before we close out, I'm not going to say too much more, but I'm not going to try to follow... follow up Dr. Brown with that radio voice he got, but I just want to say one of the things that we were doing in the Congress of African People, we're going to start promoting Brother Antoine, who is the chair of the UNIA in Atlanta, came up with a suggestion. We're going to start promoting this, that we're going to rename each day of the week one of the seven principles. And of course, the Sunday will be faith, Imani, and then we start over again on Monday, being unity and so forth and so on. And so that way, it becomes a way of institutionalizing on a daily basis and develop programs and activities around those days during the year. I thought it was a brilliant idea, because we've been trying to find out how we make Kwanzaa a 365 day a year thing, and I think this is an excellent way to do it. And I know we're out of time, but I just wanted to get that in. I appreciate you so much for inviting us. It was really special to be able to share this time with you while we're having our reunion here in Los Angeles. And this was a marvelous coming together. And I hope to hope to be invited on your show again, as well as Brother Heshimu, Dr. Brown, and Sister Chicheco, look to be invited again also.
Well, thank you, Brother. And we will be getting together soon. And we come to the intermission of this conversation for the motherland, cradle of civilization, for the ancestors and their indomitable spirit, for the elders from whom we can learn much. for our growth to represent, and for our youth, promise for tomorrow, for our people, the original people, for our struggle, and in remembrance of those who have struggled on our behalf, for Umoja, the principle of unity, which should guide us in all that we do, for the Creator, that's all things, great and small. I say, Asantanada, Hotep, peace and love, Assalamu alaikum, Namaste, we give thanks.
Hotep, Ashe, Baba.
Ashe.